if you have not watched the Allegiant Air expose that ran on 60 Minutes on Sunday night, I will tell you a little bit about it. If you have watched it, then I'm sure you're just as appalled as I am, and your outlook for Allegiant Air stock is probably not optimistic. I can't see this stock doing anything, at least over the next couple of months. However, that didn't stop some people, notably some analysts at CNN Money, from coming out and issuing a report at 5 o'clock today saying that the company will be able to ride out its troubles. So we'll talk about that and my quick analysis of the situation as it pertains to ALGT, Allegiant Air. So today's April 16th, 2018. This is QTR podcast number 20, actually. As usual, this is not investment advice and is opinion only and all of that stuff. You can read the disclaimer on my website, quotetheravenresearch.com, and that pretty much tells you everything you need to know, with the exception of the fact that there is a 2-drink minimum required for this podcast. So if you haven't had a couple of cold ones, now would be a great time to do it. As long as you're not listening from the coach cabin of an Allegiant Airlines flight. I don't even know if they have Wi-Fi on their plane, but if they do and you're listening to this and you're in the coach cabin of an Allegiant Air flight at this point, your best bet is to just save yourself, not worry about anybody else, open the cockpit door and just jump for it. And, you know, it's 99.999% chance you're not going to make it. But hey, you know, anything's possible. Oh, that's cold. That's some cold shit. If you didn't see it last night, some old battle axe investigative reporter from 60 Minutes, whose name I don't know, but I've seen on TV probably a billion times, finished off a 7-month investigation into Allegiant Air by arriving at the conclusion that the airline will probably kill you if you fly Allegiant Air. Now, of course, that is hyperbole or gross exaggeration for humorous effect. So before Allegiant Air legal department sends me a cease and desist, I will go on record and say that that is just purely a comedic observation. But you can sue me if you'd like. You're not going to get anywhere because you can't really get blood from a stone. But not everybody who rides Allegiant Air is definitely going to die. However, it was pointed out in the 60 Minutes report last night that they have 3.5 times the mechanical failures than the average airline. And if that doesn't scare the fuck out of people, I don't really know what's going to do it. So we're going to see one of two things here. We're going to see an amazing experiment in Darwinism if people continue to fly Allegiant Airlines in order to save $7 or whatever it is that they can save by flying Allegiant versus Southwest or Frontier or any of the other economy airlines. Or we're going to see a fantastic experiment in common sense where hopefully people realize that dying is not something that you traditionally look for from a domestic flight. You want your peanuts, you want your ginger ale, maybe even your champagne. Maybe you want to listen to some tunes on your iPhone. You want to recline your seat back a little bit so that you can get comfortable, but not so much as to take up the space of the person behind you. And generally, you want to get on the plane alive and get off the plane alive. I watched the entire expose today, finally. I'm a day late. I know on Friday it was disclosed that they were going to be publishing it, and the stock dropped on Friday. And this morning, the stock dropped again at the open. But after I got done watching, and I was probably the last person who was an investor that was actually interested in the investing side of the story to watch it. I mean, if you're a trader and this is a name that you trade or a name you own, you probably knew about it Friday. You were probably on top of it, taking care of your position, bracing for either the worst or, you know, to go in and buy some more or whatever the hell you want to do. And you probably watched it live last night, but that was not the case with me. I was late to the party on this, which is strange because I'm usually on top of things like this. But I watched it today and my jaw dropped. I could not believe how damning the report was. I know people have been comparing it to the Lumber Liquidators report that 60 Minutes did, but I thought this was significantly worse. And I was surprised to see that the stock didn't sell off more again today. Now, I know people were saying there was going to be a critical report coming out Friday. So there may have been some people prepared for the stock to drop that maybe came in and bought some stock today. Or I don't know if the company has a buyback in place or not. But maybe they came in and bought some of their own stock today. I don't know. But after watching the report and looking at my screen and seeing that the stock was at lows of the day, still down another $5 or whatever today, I nibbled some puts today. I took a little bit of a short position today because the report was incredibly damning, And you can say that 60 Minutes sensationalized. And I know there were a lot of people that were critical of the 60 Minutes report on Lumber Liquidators, of accusing them of making cause for alarm where there wasn't. And, you know, there was a lot of controversy about how the CARB compliance testing was done and, you know, whether or not the formaldehyde emissions happened, you know, from flooring products that had the top layer of varnish on them or whatever. There was a whole bunch of stuff that was up for debate. But this story is much simpler, and it's going to make sense to people that are not chemists. You don't have to understand formaldehyde emissions to know that an airline with 3.5 times as many maintenance and mechanical issues or failures as a normal airline is a huge problem. And even more stunning than that was the Federal Aviation Administration. They, you know, rolled out some spokesman, some gentleman in his late 50s, probably some type of 20-year career in the aviation industry or 30-year career, some heralded veteran who dutifully came out and said, you know, this is a problem. Well, we are looking at it, you know. And the guy that was interviewing him was like, yeah, you're looking at it, but what are you doing? I was, well, we're doing lots of things. Just today, somebody put a paper on my desk. How about that? You know, just today, I sent an email. So this guy was giving the boilerplate responses. You know, I use the copier. I use the fax. So there's things going on at our office. It's, I use the stapler. I use paper clips. I mean, this is an official thing that we're running. Yeah, but what about, sir, what about the planes? And this one here that had engine failure after 3 hours of sitting on the tarmac having maintenance done to the engine exploded as soon as it took off. Well, no, no, you're going to get some of that. You know, the older McDonnell Douglas planes, they do have the oldest fleet in the industry. That's what you want to hear when you're sitting next to the engine on the right wing and you go to take off, like the woman showed her video camera footage from yesterday of her taking off and the engine just explodes while they're on takeoff. That's what she wants to hear. You know, well, you know, it's an old fleet. McDonnell Douglas, they stopped manufacturing the plane in 1999. How about this? Here's a new rule. When you fly, if your plane has an ashtray on the table in front of you, we should probably decommission the plane. All right? That just seems like common sense. I flew on a plane maybe a year ago, smaller plane for a regional flight. It had ashtrays on the seat in front of it. Now, I'm not an aviation expert, but I'm not sure an airplane with ashtrays on it was manufactured any time, you know, after the Mesozoic era. Maybe they should start to take a look at how long these things are in their fleet. I think I read something that said that the average plane that was in Allegiant's fleet was like 28 years old, and they're all secondhand. I mean, I just don't understand, first off, why anybody would select flying Allegiant Air, just knowing that in general. I understand that people can't pay up for tickets. I know that, you know, flying is expensive and it's a hassle and it's a pain in the ass. But when you hear something like they have 3.5 times more mechanical failures than most other airlines, that to me is very alarming. And I would just assume stay home than get on a flight to Orlando to go on my, you know, obligatory Disney World vacation or wherever I'm flying on Allegiant for $79. Let me explain something. If you can get an airplane ticket for under $100, something's wrong. I mean, that's just like common sense, right? If somebody offered me somebody out of nowhere offered me, like, Chris, we can fly you to London for $50, and we're running a special. I don't even care what airline it is. The answer's no. I don't know, because there's some fuckery there somewhere. Something's going on. You can't fly people across the globe, you know, for that cheap. I think these guys are only domestic flights, but the point is, even from Philadelphia to Orlando, okay, if you're paying $49 for an airline ticket, something's wrong. Something is very wrong. You have to wonder what's going on. And I understand that not everybody has the means to fly United or Delta, but the price differences between Allegiant and airlines like Frontier or Spirit or Southwest, that Delta can't be that big. And given the choice, if people are made aware of this report, I just can't envision people getting on Allegiant flights after this report has come out. I mean, this expose basically said you are 3.5 times more likely to experience a mechanical failure or a maintenance issue on an Allegiant flight. So forget about just the fact that that's an inconvenience. We've all been on flights where they're stopped, you know, at the terminal before you leave. Oh, there's a flat tire. We've got to do this. We've got to do that. By the way, my flight attendant friends tell me all those excuses are bullshit, too. They say it's a flat tire. You know, it's probably the engine. But my flight attendant friend tells me they never tell you exactly what's going on. But the point of the matter is, why? Why would you even get... look, being dead is an inconvenience. But let's just move away from the you're going to die thing and talk about what an inconvenience it is in general when you have maintenance issues. I mean, flying is already as big of a pain in the ass as it can possibly be. It is a huge problem. There's only so much airspace, and there's only so many flights, and there's only so many carriers, and the whole industry is a giant monopoly, really. And all these airlines do are consistently figure out ways to save money and fuck the customer at the same time. You know, when flying came out, you used to be able to bring all your luggage, like 16 bags and everything you owned at your house. And there were, you know, there was 2 seats in an aisle and everybody was smoking and drinking champagne. And it was like Mad Men every flight, you know. Everybody had their own flight attendant. And gradually, as the profit motive has kicked in, and you know, the problem really is the population is just getting out of control. We've so many more people in the country, and everybody's just getting bigger. You know, people in general are just getting larger in girth. So you got more people, the people are bigger in size, and you have 7 airlines that run the world, and they're all looking for ways to save money. Now, for United and Delta, that might be we've kicked the shit out of you and dragged you off a flight. Also something that traditionally you don't look for when you travel. Who are you? 60-year-old doctor? Great, kick this guy's ass and drag him off the flight. And make sure you guys get video of this, too. It's going to be great. We'll put it on our website. What is this, your dog? Yeah, we'll kill that also. Doesn't matter. The airlines have such a monopoly. Because if you want to go somewhere, unless you're Richard Branson and you own your own airline or you have a private jet, you are at the behest of Delta Airlines or United or JetBlue or Air Canada or Lufthansa or whatever you fly. You have no voice in the matter. It's nice that they try to pretend like they're going to provide great customer service, and some of the premier airlines do. But really, it's a monopoly. And what this monopoly has done, I mean, think about it. You're flying domestically. I mean, there's what, 7 or 8 major airlines that you can fly on? That's it. You'll go when they say you'll go. The flights are scheduled in advance, so you will take one of the predetermined flights. And when you get to the terminal, they might just tell you they don't have a seat for you. And if they don't, you know, fuck you, because we're the airline and we do whatever we want. You used to be able to, like, actually, airlines used to consider, oh, you're going on a vacation? You're probably going to want to bring luggage. Now it's like, what are you doing with more than 1 bag? Asshole. You're going to New Orleans for 2 weeks and you want to bring luggage? Jesus. That's a $59 fee per cubic feet. This actually happened to me. I was flying like 3 weeks ago. I flew. And they took, and I have a carry-on bag. I fly once in a while, so I have a relatively fair understanding of what I'm doing. I have a carry-on bag that I always carry on. And I don't think I've ever checked luggage ever, no matter where I've been going. I think maybe when I went to Europe, I checked a bag, one. But that's it. Domestic flights, you know. And I get everything I need in one bag. So I have one carry-on that I bring on all the time. And if you travel, you know that when you buy carry-on luggage, the designs are different, but they all look the same and they're all the same shape so that they all can adhere to the standards set by all airlines, which are the same dimensions for carry-on luggage. And 3 weeks ago, I was flying and I'm standing in line waiting to board, and everybody has their carry-on luggage and everybody's boarding and nobody has a problem, and I go to board. And the guy takes my bag and he goes to put it in the metal. They have metal sizing things that they have before you get on the plane. And if your bag doesn't fit into the metal sizing grid, then they know it's too big for a carry-on and they make you check it. But for the most part, everybody can kind of eyeball carry-on bags and they know what they look like, especially if you work at an airline. You should be able to look at a bag and know that it's too big to carry on or not too big to carry on. They're all the same dimensions. They're all the same size. But I'm getting ready to board, and this guy takes my bag, and he like gently places it on top of the metal grid to measure it. Now, the metal grid and carry-on bags are made to the specific dimensions that are necessary for carry-on luggage. So they're made just as big as possible so that they can qualify for carry-on luggage. And this guy takes my bag and he just places it on top of the metal holster. And anybody that's ever used one of those knows that you have to jam your fucking bag in there to make your point. And that's okay. As long as you can get the damn thing in there, it's like priority mail. You know, you can put as much shit as you want in this box for $6.25, but it has to fit in the box. And so this guy sits it on top of the metal grid and he's like, oh, we need to charge you for your bag. You have to check this bag. I'm like, listen, bub, let me explain something to you, all right? I've never checked this bag before. It's never been too big. It's not too big today. Something didn't happen to this bag over the last, you know, month where it grew in size. So I'm not checking it. I said, this is ridiculous. I said, look, can I go and put the thing in there? He's like, yes, you can put it in there, but, you know, you have to check the bag. I was like, watch this. I walked over to the bag and I took my foot and I stomped on it and I stomped the thing down into the fucking metal holster. And I was like, all right, it's going on with me. He's okay, okay. So the point of the matter is, and you know, took me 12 minutes to get the thing out of there, but I wound up carrying it on. The point is these airlines are looking for every possible corner that they can cut to screw people. I mean, this is... We're worried about monopolies elsewhere in business. Has anybody even noticed that the airline industry is one giant monopoly? And what happens is, you know, United will come up with some new bullshit rule. You know, Tuesdays, your bag must adhere to different baggage standards, and you will be served a half-size portion of peanuts as opposed to a normal-size portion of peanuts. I love things like that. Like, sir, this is a 3-hour flight, sir. We don't even have a bathroom on this plane. Things like that. Nice little amenities for flyers. And one airline comes up with some stupid rule, you know, every bag is $99 now. And then all of them implement it. Because if one implements it, and then they all implement it, well, then you can't go anywhere else. What are you going to do? Get your pilot's license and fly yourself? I don't think so, although it does seem to be a viable alternative to Allegiant Air, if you ask me. So these airlines have a massive monopoly, and these executives, I'm sure, just sit around in boardrooms looking for new ways to make money. So as I said, on flights like Delta or flights like United, maybe that is, hey, we don't offer top shelf liquor anymore, or, you know, we source our coffee from somewhere else, or... You know, we don't offer in-flight meals for flights that are less than 3 hours instead of flights that are less than 2 hours. They, you know, the profit motive has everybody trimming to find that little extra tiny little sliver, that little fucking nugget of efficiency that they can get that can, you know, they can cram out another 8 cents per passenger times 100 passengers on a flight times 1,000 flights a day, you know, drops to 1/1,000th of a penny in the company's earnings report. So that some executive can get his bonus. And I guess that's all right. However, safety is a very big deal with airlines. It is an enormous deal. It's the deal. Safety is the deal with airlines. And the one thing that you can't sacrifice is safety. So if United wants to cut back my peanut rations, will I be upset? Yeah, I'll be a little upset. But as long as the plane has enough fucking gas in it to get me to where we're going, I'm not going to have any type of huge problem. Just leave me alone. Let me sit here and listen to my music. Or read the section in the book that says Our Fleet. That's always my favorite. At the back of the airline magazine, I look at those planes like I have any idea what I'm looking at. It's Our Fleet. Here at American Airlines, we've got 22 Airbus 570s. We've got 16 Airbus 320s. We've got 19 Boeing 2200s. We've got 15 McDonnell Douglas 1440s. And I'm standing there just looking at the pictures, and I'm just thinking, yeah, those look like airplanes. Yeah, everything checks out here. No fucking idea what I'm looking at. But I like that part in the magazine, because they always go from the biggest planes to the tiniest ones. And I like to look at all the different pictures of the airplanes. I can't imagine what that brochure looks like for Allegiant Airlines. You know, our fleet, we've got 22 McDonnell Douglas, you know, manufactured in 1860. Our airplanes proudly run on kerosene. You have to wind them up to start them. Don't worry about the black smoke in the cabin. That's completely normal. And that is, you don't have to pay extra for that. That's now an amenity. By the way, there will be no peanuts served on this flight either. We don't serve food on flights that are less than 5 hours. Enjoy your flight here. Look, I just don't think that investors are going to compromise when it comes to air travel. I think that Allegiant is going to have some blowback from this. This is not hardwood flooring. Look, as I said, if there's anything that works to the airline's advantage, it's the fact that they have a huge monopoly. Working to their disadvantage is there is a greater chance you will die flying Allegiant Airlines than there are other airlines, according to CBS. Now, of course, Allegiant Air and the Federal Aviation Administration today, they issued statements. And they issued very official statements on letterhead that said, "We disagree with the findings of CBS." I don't know about you, but that makes me feel a lot better. Quick, put out a statement. And if that didn't have you feeling optimistic enough about flying Allegiant Air, here at the end of the day, 5:22 p.m. this was published, CNN Money published a report entitled "Allegiant Air Can Ride Out Safety Questions Raised by 60 Minutes Report." Here's what CNN Money had to say. This is why CNN Money is the top source in financial news. I'm making a face. You can't see, but just trust me. Allegiant Air may be able to weather a scathing 60 Minutes report on the low-price airline's ugly safety record. The airline and some of the analysts who cover it say it is safe and on track to put many of its operational problems behind it. Ah! Well, there you go, huh? Problem solved. I don't really understand what CNN Money is talking about. Unless they're replacing the 28 airplanes that were manufactured in the 16th century, I don't really get what they're talking about. Sunday's 60 Minutes report detailed more than 100 of what it described as serious mechanical incidents between the start of 2016 and 2017. Those incidents included mid-air engine failures, smoke, fumes in the cabin, rapid descents, flight control malfunctions, hydraulic leaks, and aborted takeoffs. And if you watched the report last night, the flight control malfunctions was literally like, at one point there was a pin that holds in a bunch of the instrumentation in the cockpit, and that was just missing. That wasn't even a flight control malfunction like, oh, the computer doesn't work. It was a flight control malfunction like the fucking screw is not bolted in and the whole airplane's going to come apart. It is not a flight control malfunction. That is your airplane is actually falling apart malfunction. Allegiant has no fatal crashes since its 2001 founding, but it reported at least 60 unscheduled landings and 47 in-flight emergencies over the past 2 years. That seems like a lot. 47 in-flight emergencies over the past 2 years. Now, granted, in airline parlance, an emergency isn't always something's exploding. A lot of times if planes are circling to land and they run low on fuel, they have to declare an emergency so they can get priority to land and things like that. But 47 seems like a lot over the course of 2 years. I know that these guys have many flights per day, and they, I'm sure they have many airplanes and many routes. And, you know, airline travel is statistically the safest way to travel. There's something ridiculous, like, you know, 900,000 flights a year or something that happen. And very rarely do you hear about even one accident. But these numbers and the fact that they were 3.5 times the industry average or the comparables, that's nuts. That's insane. The CNN article continues, the number of Allegiant's serious safety problems were 3.5 times greater than the nation's other major airlines, according to the report. Most of the problems were associated with the MD-80 aircraft, which are among the oldest aircraft operating today. They have not been built since 1999, nearly 20 years ago, according to airfleets.net, a service that tracks aircraft owned by airlines. The average age of the MD-80s that Allegiant still operates is 28.2 years old. The average age of the airplane that you're flying in, if you're flying in an MD-80 on Allegiant, is 28.2 years old. 28.2 years old. That's crazy. That's crazy. I mean, do you see cars from 1988 driving? Now, I know cars are different than airplanes. I'm trying to make an analogy here before I get some, you know, engineer sending me an email. Well, the differences between cars and the airplanes, the maintenance schedules are different, the engines are different, there's a different set of circumstances. Before I get that email, just I'm making a basic observation. That's almost 30 years. 30 years is a very long time. That's almost my whole life. You're stepping on, that would be like stepping into a 1989 car every time you went to go drive somewhere. In 89. That's the average age, too. That means that there's one older than that. Nothing like getting on a flight, you know? Hey, this plane's 35 years old, just so you know. Enjoy your flight, by the way. Also, no peanuts. There will be no peanuts on this flight. Enjoy your flight on this 35-year-old airplane. We just need to. Today, we'll be showing, reruns of Matlock. It's a hip new series that just came out. And Perry Mason Mysteries also will be shown on the flight. By the way, congratulations to recently elected President Jimmy Carter. We're all very proud of him. Look, Allegiant stock trades at 10 times earnings right now. If you're looking at next year's estimates, right? It's trading at a PE of 10, trailing PE of 12, which for the airline industry is actually par for the course. Airline industry doesn't usually get a premium multiple. So you don't see airlines. Let's just do a quick look at comps real quick. Just so I'm not talking out of my ass. Well, I'll be talking out of my ass, no doubt. But just so I'm talking out of my ass less than I normally would be. But if I remember correctly, airline. Okay, so Delta trades at a forward PE of 7.5. And American trades at a forward PE of 6.6. And so Allegiant's forward PE of 10 is already overvalued for the industry. I'm guessing probably because they've been growing the bottom line significantly. My guess is that will stop. So let's take next year's estimates, which are $13.91. And let's just give them a multiple of 8 as soon as I figure out how to use my calculator app on my computer. Sorry. 13. Jesus. Numlock. We still have to push the Numlock key. The year is 2018. We can't get a keyboard that figures out when we want to use the numerical pad and when we don't want to use the numerical pad. Just Numlock. Just lock it. Don't even put the key on there. When I buy a keyboard, assume that I want to use the numerical keypad and just leave it on. And whatever other function I get from Numlock being off, just give me that also. Put it somewhere else on the keyboard. I don't want to have to... I can't... You spend one time... Sit, think about this. Every time you go to use the numerical keypad and the Numlock key is off and you need to take 3 seconds of your life to put it on, and you have to do that over the course of your life using a computer. Now probably I have been for, let's say, maybe 20 years. And let's just say on average it happens, you know, 20 times a year. And that's being safe. Now probably once a month. Once every 12 months that happens, that you have to go and use the Numlock key. So that's 12 months times, let's just say it takes 2 seconds. So that's 24 seconds a year that I'm using just pressing the Numlock key. At 20 years, that's 480 total seconds that I've spent pressing the Numlock key my whole life. Divided by 60, that's 8 minutes. 8 minutes of my life just hitting the Numlock key. That's it. And those of you that are older than me and use Excel more and stuff like that, you guys have probably spent at least 15 minutes of your life. You know, there's people come out with those statistics. You spend half your life on the toilet. You spend 8 minutes. I've spent 8 minutes of my life just going like this. Look. Not to mention all the time that I spent actually thinking I'm putting in calculations and things like that while the key is off, only to look up at the screen and see that nothing has... It's a very frustrating enterprise. Back to what I was doing. What the fuck was I doing? I don't even remember what I was doing. Oh, right. Allegiant PE. Right. Okay. So 1390 times 8. So a PE of 8 would put the stock at $111. Now, let's say that... And obviously, the first thing that would probably get roped in here would be the price-to-earnings ratio. You want to have a smaller, less aggressive price-to-earnings ratio for a company where the future gets a little bit crowded. And I don't know what the PE ratio was before all this stuff happened. Maybe it was 12 or 13, but certainly seemed to be a lot for the airline industry. So if you take next year's estimates and you apply a PE of 8, you get $112 a share. Now, if you really want to get even a little bit more aggressive, let's take the $13.90 that they're supposed to make next year and let's hack off 10%. Say they lose 10% of their business. So we'll hack off $1.39 from that. And that's $12.51, and now let's give that an 8 multiple. And that's $100 even. So $100 is a significant support level, and it's a psychological level, and probably where the stock should head. I do think that the company is going to wind up having a problem with this report. I think not only that it's going to, you know, slow business down, but I think it'll turn into being a PR disaster, even more so than it already has been. And I think that, as I said today on Twitter, members of Congress will start to ask for an investigation, and the FAA may come out and say something else aside from the fact that, you know, we defend our long record of safety. It's like, dude, the fucking cockpit is not bolted in properly. It's not a flat tire, you know? It's not a flat tire. It's happening 3.5 times more than every average airline. And just like, oh, well, you know, we've communicated, we issued the company a letter. Oh, well, that should do it. So Allegiant Airlines, I think, will come down in price. Again, this isn't investment advice, and I don't hold any licenses and really don't know what I'm talking about. Aside from all that, I like the short bet here. I think there's a lot of downside relative to peers, and I think that if the multiple comes in and also if earnings estimates are readjusted, which I think they will be, I think $100 is probably not that bad of a target if you're going to short the stock. Of course, you know, I think downside to maybe like 120 is a lot more likely, but everything here seems to point to that $100. It's a round figure. It makes a little bit of sense based on the company losing some business and its multiple coming in a little bit. And Allegiant doesn't really have the best balance sheet also, if my memory serves me correctly. They have $1.1 billion in debt, and that is about three times their EBIT. So they do have a little bit of leverage. They generate cash fairly consistently, it looks like. But that's, you know, this is a stock that can definitely go lower. So I'm not sure this is a buy the dip situation, even though everything right now is a buy the dip situation. I also think it doesn't help that the market has been volatile and could potentially be at a top here. So it's not as though we're euphoric bullish all day, every day anymore. So that could work against the company. And think about this. I'll leave you with this. The company has no margin for error now. So the microscope is going to be on Allegiant. My guess is if they're smart, which, you know, I don't know if they are, but if they're smart, they're going to put some new safety procedures and other things into place here that it's they're going to wind up costing the company money. I'm sure they'll probably add them back to earnings. And so it's a one-time expense. But that will probably cost them money. And going forward, now there is going to be significant scrutiny on Allegiant. So if something as small as a toilet doesn't flush right on an Allegiant flight going forward, it's going to be all over Twitter. It's going to be everywhere. It's like United now with this pet thing and with, you know, beating the shit out of the guy and dragging him off the airplane. I think they're probably happy to be out of the limelight now. But the scrutiny is on them. And although there is a monopoly, I'm not sure that Allegiant will be able to shake this one off, especially given the fact that there's so many other economy class carriers. So we'll have to see where it goes. But one thing is for sure, the airlines have a monopoly, and it is wholly unfair, and it completely screws the customer. That's how I feel about airlines in general. The second thing is, I personally am short Allegiant stock. I think it has a little ways to go lower. I can't believe it was only off another 3% today. I think there's going to be continued fallout, PR fallout, fallout from Congress, fallout from the FAA. These things usually wind up happening in tandem. There'll probably be a couple more bad headlines. Maybe you get a whistleblower. Maybe you get a former pilot on record as saying, you know, we never have enough gas or something like that. I won't be flying Allegiant. That is for certain. To be honest with you, I always thought that these smaller carriers were held to the same standards as higher ones when it comes to all of these airline safety protocols. So this was an enlightening experience for me. And I think the stock has more room to come down, and shame on the company for having such an old fleet of aircraft that are clearly dilapidated and are falling apart. So if the company has to go out and start replacing their fleet, which would probably be the smartest thing to do, if they can do it slowly and start to at least be able to say that they're in the process of doing it, it's going to cost them money. I mean, the stock here has had a fantastic run. I'm looking at a chart of Allegiant. And let's see. Over the course of the time that it's been trading, which it looks like it started trading in 2006, and at one point the stock was offered for, looks like, 17 or 18 bucks. So you have almost a 10 bagger if you've been holding it since 2008, 2009. It peaked over 200 at one point, and now the chart looks kind of iffy. So I'd be careful with this one. I would definitely be careful with Allegiant. I wouldn't fly it. And I wouldn't buy it. Peace.